didn't move. I don't care who it is. Let's go. Give me everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown. You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right. Another week, another episode in this storied rivalry between the Philadelphia Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys here. As the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues, I'm Fran Duffy, and I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 25, the quarter century mark. And kicking off the show, we've got Greg Cosell and Chalk Talk, where this week we're going to preview those Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys are 1-0. The Eagles are obviously, as you all know, are 0-1. So this is a huge matchup. I don't want to say it's a must win, but it's one of those games where you got to have. This is a big game here for both of these teams as they enter the season here in 2015. So second up on the show, we've got Two Technique with Stephen Morris, the new third-string quarterback for the Eagles. It was a great, great interview. And we're going to cover the All-American pass concept, the smash play. So really, really enjoyed my conversation with Stephen. I hope you guys do too. And then we're going to close it off. We've got Saturday Scouting. The beat writer from the New Orleans Times-Picayune, Randy Rosetta, is going to talk to us about some of the top prospects for the LSU football Tigers, those Bayou Bengals and Benny Logan. So as my partner in crime here fist pumps with the mention of Benny and LSU, let's bring in my favorite person in the room, Brian Thomas. What's up, BT?
Nothing much until you go down to LSU. You know, you become an honorary Tiger. So we went down there, met Mike the Tiger, who's their mascot, but enjoy LSU. I've always been kind of a big fan. Got to be at Death Valley and really kind of just soak yourself in that atmosphere. So it's,
I would love to go to a game in Death Valley.
I said to Benny, I was like, Benny, we did this feature. We hooked you up. We had a great time down here. All I'm asking is, can I come down to a game with you? And we're going to do a bye week.
Bye week.
It's their bye week.
Ah.
So I was like, jeez. Of course. They play Alabama the following week, so they always have their bye week.
And that's the game. Like, if you told me one game, I can watch one game.
LSU-Alabama.
Every year I would take that game.
Even if there's no prominent guys, it's always got the rivalry. You know, and I was saying to Benny, I was like, is that your biggest rival? He's like, last 15, 20 years, that's, you know, yeah. It's been us, you know, so Love going down there. So sure. That should be a good interview. They have a lot of that kid Fournette is on.
Fournette's a beast.
Believe he's a sophomore too, so
yeah,
he's got another year. So.
Yep. It's funny we bring up Benny Logan. I thought that Benny was one of the guys that stood out most in the
played
loss
great.
Against Atlanta. Just continuing his development here as one of the top nose tackles in the NFL. I thought it was interesting.
Gruden gave him a lot of love in the broadcast.
Did he?
Yeah.
No, that was, yep. I mean, you know, it's interesting because for the first time, a team game plan to take him out of the game. Early on in the game, you saw a lot of those stretch run plays with the wham element where they'd bring a tight end across the formation just to get the nose tackle out, and that was Benny Logan. So we saw, you know, a handful of times, especially early. So it was interesting that they decided to go that route. But Benny is just, you know, he's just turned into just such a monster.
We signed Isaac Sopawaga, you know, a couple years ago, and then he gets traded halfway through the year, and everyone's like, whoa, what's going on here? But
right.
The emergence of Benny, you know, I mean,
everyone forgets that he was drafted. Everyone
he's
thought he was going to be
pick.
At the end.
Right, everyone's third-round pick, and he kind of just flew under the radar. I mean, I hate to use that term, but,
right.
I mean, he's a third-round pick. People had to know who he was. But, you know, in the area, people didn't know much about him, but he's certainly risen, and he's playing great.
No question about it. So I'm going to talk about Benny Logan. We're going to talk about the offense. We're going to talk about the secondary and a whole lot more here with Chalk Talk. Let's welcome in Greg Cosell from NFL Films. We're going to talk about the Eagles-Falcons matchup and preview those Dallas Cowboys.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Joining me once again here on Chalk Talk on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, NFL Films senior producer Greg Cosell. Greg, we are officially in week two, and it's a scary thought, but we're already feeling the grind here as the NFL season is just underway, and we're dragging a little bit here on Tuesday night.
I don't think we're probably feeling as badly as the Eagles, however, but
true.
Yes, it's the grind starts early, and the Super Bowl seems a long way off to me right about now.
The Super Bowl seems a long way off. Week 8 seems a long way off. But, hey, it's Dallas week here in Philadelphia. Before we get to the Cowboys, though, I just wanted to pick your brain. We're now 24 hours removed from the Eagles' loss to the Atlanta Falcons, a game that went in a way that neither of us really saw it going as we were leading up to the game. But after watching the tape this morning, what were your initial takeaways? Let's just start on the offensive side of the ball. By the way, I hate a lot of people ask me, oh, what'd you think when you watched the tape? And it's like, well, what do you want to know?
Right.
Where do you want to
start? Yeah, exactly.
I promise I won't do that to you. You know, let's start on the offensive side of the football. Sam Bradford, and what did you see from Sam? There was a lot of discussion today about, you know, in terms of stretching the field vertically and things of that nature. What did you see from Sam against Atlanta?
Well, I think you have to start with a couple of things. First of all, the Eagles' offense is really built on running a lot of plays and sustaining offense. That's really the way it's built. This is not a team that has a truly viable vertical threat as a receiver. So ultimately, what do the Eagles have to do offensively? They've got to have a good balance of run and pass, and the passing game has to be predominantly quick throws because that fits the talent that they have. And the speed tempo is theoretically what takes care of all that. Now, I guess one thing that surprised me when you talk about takeaways from the game is they didn't really run much inside zone. That
No.
didn't seem to be a part of the initial game plan, and that surprised me. I thought that they would try to attack inside. I don't think the Falcons did anything where you said, wow, they're taking away the inside zone. I mean, the Falcons, and I know you watched the tape as well, I think on every snap in the game they played single high safety, and they played either cover three or man free for the most part.
Yep.
So they didn't do anything that was not, I'm sure, expected or predictable. Now, watching the tape, I almost got the sense that the Falcons said to the Eagles, if you want to complete five-yard passes, feel free. Because if you can do six, seven, eight times, go down the field with 13, 14 play drives, great. Then you'll win the game.
You got to earn it.
But we don't think you can do that over the course of four quarters. And obviously, the Eagles, no run game at all to start. And what surprised me was it's not just they didn't gain yards, there was not a commitment to running the football, and I really thought that there would be a strong commitment to running the football.
You know, we talked about it yesterday leading up to the kickoff show on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. We were sitting in the studio workroom, and we were just kind of talking to just general thoughts leading up to the game, and I brought up the fact that last year when we played Jacksonville, there were a lot of throws that were left on the field
right.
In terms of attacking that cover three scheme on the back end. Same thing against Seattle, where there were a lot of throws. And for not just because of Sanchez, but also because of the protection, you know, Michael Bennett had a huge impact. Kevin Williams, McDaniel, some of those guys from the Seattle defensive line had a huge impact in getting in Sanchez's face and forcing the ball out quickly. But there were a lot of plays left on the field vertically. So I hate to sound like this is what we call it an Adam Kaplanism, where you say you kind of talk out of both sides here. But I hate to say, like, I wasn't surprised to see them go so hard on the pass game. But I was surprised, like
right.
you said, because I was expecting to see a heavy run.
And I don't think there were a lot of throws right. left on the field in this
no,
game.
No, I don't think so either.
And in fact, you know, one of the things that a lot of coaches, I remember getting the opportunity to spend some time with Gary Patterson, the head coach of TCU.
Okay.
And one of the things he said in defending all these spread teams, because it's so hard in college, is he said, sometimes you have to make a better call than the offense. And I thought that there were times the Eagles tried something. Like, for instance, we showed last week the 3-by-1 set.
Right, the four verticals.
The four
yep.
verticals.
Yep.
And the Eagles tried that with Jordan Matthews as the inside slot receiver. And on that particular play, instead of being in cover three, the Falcons were in man free, and Trufant was on Matthews, and he knocked the pass away.
Right.
If it was cover three, that would have been a 30-yard gain.
Right.
But that particular play, and I'm sure you remember the play.
Yes.
That particular play, the Falcons were in man coverage, and therefore Trufant was able to be in great position to knock the pass away.
Yeah, and that's what I guess I wasn't surprised, again, to see them go with the pass because of what happened last year. And I agree with you. There weren't that many plays that were really, you know, oh, man, I wish Bradford let it loose here.
And they weren't worried about the pass rush.
No.
And there wasn't really – look, Bradford got hit a few times. But in the overall scheme of throwing 50-plus passes or 50-plus dropbacks, he really wasn't hit that much.
Yeah. What do you – let me ask you this question, because this got brought up actually when we were in the studio yesterday, was – I guess they showed a graphic. I missed it during the broadcast about Bradford and over his career and the average yards per attempt and how it's really, really low.
Right.
And just in reference to him checking down. In this offense, what do you make of a stat like that?
I think that without knowing context, and I know context because I watched all his snaps with the Rams,
right.
I think that's a meaningless – for people that look at that and say, oh, he can't throw it down the field, that's pointless.
Right.
Because with the Rams, he had very poor pass protection and not a very good receiving core.
Right.
So Sam Bradford can make every throw.
Right. And again, in this offense – with the amount of short, you know,
that's
the
offense.
You got the screen game, you got the hitches, you got the shallow crosses, the quick slants. I mean, that's what the offense is a quick game offense.
The offense really only becomes a long game depending on what the defense does. I mean, I can remember you talk about Jacksonville when last year Nick Foles hit Jeremy Maclin for a 60 some odd yard touchdown because the deep safety, incorrectly, as the single high safety jumped the run action in the backfield. So Maclin, out of a 3-by-1 set as the number two receiver, was able to run down the seam and no one covered him.
Right.
But this offense is not really built on deep shots. And quite honestly, we don't know what Nelson Aguilar is at this point in time at all. But they don't really have a deep receiver on the team. So they're not a team that's just going to take deep shots.
Right. I wonder, let me ask you this, how much – in watching this offense now over the past couple of years, how many of their deep shot plays do you see as generated by, you know, I almost want to say they're manufactured deep shot plays where you see the three-level stretches and off the boot action and the naked action where, you know, maybe you don't necessarily need the 4-3 guy.
Right.
But, you know, with so much going on in the backfield that maybe you can kind of manufacture some of those deep shots. We saw that a lot last year in terms of getting – and obviously Maclin is one of those guys.
Well,
get over the top.
Let's look at the contrast with the game that was just played.
Sure.
Look at what the Falcons did, okay? The Falcons did a lot of two-back sets, max pro, running deeper routes, okay?
Right.
A lot of post-cross with two receivers where Julio Jones would go to the deep post. Roddy White would run a crosser, and once he adjusted and came back out – but it built into that play call, depending on how safeties respond, you can take an over-the-top shot. The Eagles, you don't see a lot of that kind of offense and pass game with the Eagles, those kinds of concepts. I mean, every once in a while you'll see a three-level stretch. Every once in a while you'll see a switch-release concept
right.
where they try to get a receiver vertical down
which
the sideline.
We saw that a few times yesterday.
Right, right. Yeah. And they didn't necessarily work. They certainly do the wheel route, which
right.
you can debate whether that's truly a vertical route, you know, but it's a wheel route. You don't see a ton of it. I think it becomes game-specific at times. I would have expected to see a little more of it against a team playing predominantly cover three, but it's week one, and I think week one is always a little unpredictable, and teams are not necessarily in their groove yet. You know, it's very easy coming off the euphoria of the preseason, Fran. You know, this was still a regular season game. Everything's different. Bradford only played, what, 50 snaps, give or take, in the preseason?
Yeah, I think it was 35 total. It might have been.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, So I was being liberal with that.
Right.
So it's a whole different speed of the game. I remember talking to Ron Jaworski and Merrill Hodge over the years on, you know, my matchup show, and one of the first things they told me was, once the regular season starts, everything gets amped up. You know, if you're a rookie, you have no idea. It just blows you away. I mean, it's just everything is faster.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You've got a backfield with Bradford, DeMarco Murray, Ryan Matthews, all working on timing. You've got two new starters
right.
at guard. You've got a couple new receivers here. You're mixing it in the mix. There's a lot of change here, a lot of turnover on the Eagles' offense that we've talked about throughout this offseason. Looking on the other side of the ball, one of the things I noticed right off the jump, actually, was the very first play of the game. And they did it a couple different times in the first, I want to say 15 or so snaps. Atlanta ran their stretch run play, but with a little bit of a wham element there where they were bringing a tight end across to block Benny Logan. What do you see? When do teams typically use that tactic on a defensive lineman? Is it more like the – I know Ndamukong Suh is one of the ones that they've seen that.
Penetrating guys.
Yeah.
You know, because the Eagles are a 3-4, but they don't play that two-gap the way people think of 3-4s. People penetrate. And I think with the quickness of the Eagles' O-line, D-line, and the Falcons knowing they had to run the ball because they could not be one-dimensional against this Eagle defense.
Right.
They just couldn't be. I think that they wanted to make sure that those plays were not run down before they had a chance to even start. And I thought the Falcons had a really good plan. They did a lot of stretch run, and then in the second half to sort of play off the fast flow that the defense starts doing with stretch run, they started the windbacks by design,
right.
The design cutback, and they had some success with that as well.
Yeah, no question about it. So let's transition now to this game against Dallas. And obviously, look, the team's 0-1. You look at the Cowboys now coming in 1-0. Very easily could be the other way around with the Eagles 1-0 and Dallas 0-1. Starting, obviously, the big story with Dallas is no Dez Bryant. We've watched this offense over the years, sometimes with Dez, sometimes without him, sometimes with Tony Romo, sometimes without him. Now they come to Lincoln Financial Field with no Dez, no DeMarco Murray. I'm very, very intrigued to see what they look like come Sunday afternoon.
And now it becomes a little bit of a guess.
Right.
I think with Dez, you'd see a lot of shotgun one-back sets. I'm curious. The Cowboys will study the tape hard, just like you and I did, of the Falcons offense. And the Falcons had great success with two-back sets throwing the ball. I mean, out of two-back sets throwing the ball, Matt Ryan was 8-for-9 for 150 yards. So the Cowboys do have a fullback on their roster, Tyler Klutz, who was a big factor in their run game last year. Could they decide that, hey, we need to try to get the ball down the field? We don't have that one guy now in Dez who can win one-on-one matchups, so we need to try to orchestrate with play action, hard run action, which is really just deception, try to deceive the defense, create some opportunities. Could that be a part of their offense? We don't know, but it's something I'm thinking about. Then you still have the Jason Witten factor. How will the Eagles match up to Jason Witten? There's still some concerns. And clearly, when you're coming off a game in which your corners did not play as well as you would have hoped they would have played, you know, you can't just say, oh, no, Dez Bryant, no problem.
No, no question. You have Terrence Williams and Devin Street, who I actually kind of like Devin Street coming out of Pittsburgh last year. And now he's going to step up. He's going to see a much more increased role. I think Cole Beasley will remain in the slot.
And I think that's a fascinating matchup, because if the Eagles stay with their nickel personnel package of Malcolm Jenkins in the slot, look, we love Malcolm Jenkins as a player, but I'm not sure he's got the skill set to match up to Cole Beasley. You know, Cole Beasley is a lowercase version of the Julian Edelmans of the world. You know, when it's 3rd and 5 and Beasley runs those option or whip routes or whatever you want to call them, you know, those are tough. They go for 7 yards and they don't seem like big plays, but they get first downs.
Right.
And, you know, can Malcolm stay with that? I think that's an interesting matchup in this game.
That will be interesting to see. And what did you think, just off the cuff here, looking at when Malcolm Jenkins came down and, you know, to play in the slot and nickel, Chris Maragos came in as the third safety. Did he stand out any way, one way or another there for you in 36 snaps, I believe?
Maragos, you mean?
Maragos.
You know, in all honesty, I don't think he stood out one way or the other. I don't know how you felt about it.
I don't think he hurt them.
I don't think he was exposed in this particular game.
Yep.
You know, again, coaches grade things differently than, you know, we don't know what every call is and what he specifically has to do. But I wouldn't say he was exposed, but I think he can be in a given game. Maybe this isn't the week either with no Dez Bryant.
Right.
But, you know, I guess the most interesting element of the game Monday night was Eric Rowe didn't play a snap.
Right, and it was interesting that Nolan Carroll came out for one rep.
And E.J. Biggers came in.
So it will be interesting to watch here moving forward. Looking at the front seven, you see D'Amico Ryans play a good amount in the first half. Didn't see as many reps in the second half. You have Kiko Alonso. What did you see from Kiko now seeing really the most game action since December 2013?
I thought he was a little uneven, but I thought you saw the flashes of why he had a great rookie season and why he can become a really good player. And I think that Alonso and Kendricks will end up playing more and more, as even in the base. I mean, the game started through much of the first half, as you said, with D'Amico playing in the base and then Alonso playing in the nickel. But I think it'll end up being Kendricks and Alonso, and I think that'll be two really athletic linebackers. I was really intrigued that Vinnie Curry played meaningful snaps at outside linebacker in the base 3-4.
Right.
And who knows about Marcus Smith at this point, so that's something you might continue to see. The question is, does that take away from Vinnie Curry's ability to be a nickel pass rusher, which I think he's really good at?
Yeah, and it'll be one thing I'm very interested to see too is Lance Dunbar, a guy that we've talked about in the past, clearly is this third down back for this Dallas Cowboys
team.
Great
point.
Because you see, he led the team in catches the other night against New York, and it wasn't just swing passes out of the backfield or screen passes out of the backfield. They moved him out wide. They put him in the slot. He ran hitch routes. He ran corner routes. He ran some different screenplays.
He did
out
beat
there.
The linebacker Unger on the
yes.
one of the late drives. And actually, Romo was looking for Witten on that, but they doubled Witten, and then he had Dunbar coming out of the backfield running. You know, he almost looked like Darren Sproles on that play.
Yeah, I mean, the way that they use him is very, very interesting. And you brought up a good point too yesterday when we talked after the after we both watched the tape of the game. His role in pass protection.
Well, to me, that's probably the reason he played on those final two drives, because normally in that situation, you need a back who can pass protect. And if he was on the field for those final two drives, I would have to believe that he's viewed by the Cowboys staff as their best pass protector.
What did you think of Joseph Randall here in his first go-around?
You know, I think Randall has some juice to him. I think he's got actually a little more juice than DeMarco Murray. He's just a quicker athlete. What he lacks, and it was noticeable in the game against the Giants, he doesn't have very much power. He doesn't have natural power. So when people get their arms on him, even from the side, he goes down. And that's the big difference between he and DeMarco Murray. Murray last year, certainly anyway, ran through those tackles. Yep. Randall went down, but he's got great quickness.
One thing I found watching their defense, and I thought it was really interesting, I noticed it probably 20, 25 snaps into the game. They played significantly more dime.
Correct.
Than what I had seen in the past. And so I went back, I looked at the numbers from last year. The games I charted from 2014, they played 3% of their snaps in dime. Just the ones that I had charted. I didn't do the whole season, but 3%. Last week, they played 19% of their snaps in dime. So you saw a significant jump there. The addition of Byron Jones, even though they lost Skandrick in the preseason, very interesting to see them go that route.
Yeah, the shame, if you're a Cowboys fan, is that Randy Gregory won't play.
Sure. And
I'm sure when you watch the tape, you saw he jumped out.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually thought their pass rush was pretty good. They used a lot of stunts. They were effective. But without Gregory, they lose a lot of speed and edge quickness because Gregory looked really, really good. It's funny. When I watched Gregory at Nebraska, one of the first games I watched was against Miami of Florida when he kind of ate up Eric Flowers. And then the other night, he kind of ate up Eric Flowers.
Right. Yeah, it's very, very interesting. They're going to have a pretty good foursome there of defensive
ends.
When you look at DeMarcus Lawrence, they've got Mincy, who are going to be their two starters
and
right now.
Crawford inside is becoming a really good player.
And he was a starter at left end last year.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got good athleticism to him. So that defensive line, after kind of going unrecognized over the past couple of years, starting to shape up into a pretty decent group. Sean Lee back healthy. Did you notice any differences there?
Yeah, I think they have very good speed with their nickel linebackers. When they played nickel, it was Lee and Hitchens.
Yep.
Good speed. And when they went dime, Lee stayed on the field. And, you know, I thought that as the game progressed, Lee seemed to start moving better. I guess he just got into the feel of the game after not playing in a real game for quite a while. But he's still a pretty athletic kid.
Yeah, and then going back just to that secondary, when they did go to dime, that was where we saw Byron Jones come onto the field, and he lined up over the tight end. Sometimes, you know, whether it was man or zone, that was the one thing. But they played, I believe it was 12 snaps overall of dime, all on third down, and every single one of those snaps, Jones was lined up across from the tight end.
Yeah, and when they played nickel, it was Barry Church.
Right.
And in fact, it was Barry Church who made the play on the last play of the game for the Giants, because they tried a play where they expected Church to react to the run, and he held up Fells, the tight end, and Eli couldn't throw him the ball.
No question about it. Well, it will be a very, very interesting game. Do you have any final thoughts here as we close out week one, we move into week two? What do we have on the NFL matchup show this week? Is there anything of note that you saw on tape?
God, that's a very open-ended question. just around the league you're talking?
Yeah, sure.
Well, it's funny. I guess a lot of people are probably surprised at the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah.
And it's not just the score, but I watched that tape. It was after the Eagles game, and after being here for .com, Eagles.com, I went home and pretty much went to bed, so I didn't get to see a lot of it live. But watching the tape, the Niners just physically manhandled the Vikings on both sides of the ball, and that was one of the most surprising things I saw watching tape. I mean, they just physically dominated the game.
Yeah, very, very interesting. I didn't get a chance to check out too much of it live because obviously that was after the Eagles played last night. But It'll be interesting to watch that team moving forward because a lot of people kind of
gave up on them. Right. A lot of doom and gloom out in the Bay Area, from what I understand.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, Greg Coselli, appreciate the time once again here on Chalk Talk. We'll talk to you here next week.
Thanks, Rant.
Great stuff once again from Greg. He did a great job previewing Atlanta last week and now just getting ready for Dallas. This is going to be an exciting week getting ready for this matchup, BT. It's a short week, but we turn the page real quick. We get ready for the Cowboys, and we're moving on.
It's a great when you have a short week. You know, it's tough after a loss, but you know what? Your focus is immediately on to the next team. They always say 24 hours to kind of digest the win or loss. You have less time when you lose it. It's more like 2 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, you're on the plane, you're upset, and then you get off, wake up in the morning, and it's kind of on to the next week.
No question. So, all right, so B, it's that time of the show. Give us the update. How are things looking over at iTunes?
Pretty good. We're getting a lot of feedback. Funkatash, great name.
Yeah, Funkatash.
Vibebox, who, it's funny, he says, a great podcast with a rare emphasis on informing the curious listener. So he loves the Chalk Talk with Greg Cosell, which is obviously my meat. My NFL
meat sandwich.
Get Up Kate gave us a lot of great feedback. Sean is okay. Sean is not okay. Sean, please be okay because you're up in Maine. I know you're getting a lot of New England New England stuff up there. I went to school in Boston, so I understand what you're going through, but we try to keep you informed with what's going on in the X's and O's. And then the amazing Rando. Appreciate all the comments. Your stuff helps us create a better show, so whatever you like and don't like. I know it's kind of redundant. We've been saying it over and over again. But, again, this show is for you guys. You know, so we want to give you, especially for the people that aren't in the area and don't get that kind of that local flavor, what's going on. We try to provide that for you. So just let us know what you like, what you don't like, and give us some comments.
Yeah, no question. And I've gotten some feedback, too, on Twitter from people who just said that they love Chalk Talk. They love Two Technique. Two Technique, I think, is something that took it
to the next. I mean, we were talking about, like, what do we have? And it was like, we have access to these guys, and you know, you can really get the casual kind of X's and O's conversation. I bring up Pat Kerwin from time to time, but there's a show on Sirius, which is very kind of similar to Two Technique, where they really get X's and O's, but it's a casual conversation.
Right,
it's not deep into what's going on. So I think you kind of get in their mind, even a guy like Stephen Morris, who hasn't dressed and really hasn't been here long, you can still understand schemes and kind of understand where he sees and how a quarterback kind of, you know, sees things.
No question about it. All right, well, let's keep this ball rolling. I had a great conversation with Stephen Morris. Let's jump right into Two Technique.
Time to get inside the mind of a player. It's time for Two Technique.
Here now with Eagles quarterback Stephen Morris. And Stephen, I just want to talk about the smash concept. All-American pass play, everybody runs it from high school all on up. Can you just break down what is the smash concept, you know, from start to finish here?
But the basic thing is, if you got that hitch, go ahead and take it. You always want to get the ball out of your hands as a quarterback, so making quick decisions, and if that hitch is open, go ahead and take it. You have a big alert on that corner route. If that defensive back jumps on that hitch, then obviously you want to throw that corner behind him. Versus cover two is always going to be the biggest issue. I can't tell you how many times in high school I've thrown a pick off of that. So the biggest thing is, look at that hitch. If he jumps it, look at the corner, but then come back down to the hitch, because you're not going to have that corner, especially in cover two. So it's kind of a up, down, back, down type read. So it comes with feel, but it should be great.
When you're throwing that corner out, is there a specific placement that you're looking at there? Like, what are the big concerns when you're going to throw that corner?
It's really different versus man and versus zone. Versus man, you want to let that receiver win and judge off his break of the ball, or break off the route, actually. And the ball will come either high or you'll flatten it off, depending on however you guys teach it and as well as however the receiver comes off. But versus zone, we always try to say get high and then let the ball, you know, flatten you off.
Is there something with the defense's alignment before the snap that can kind of tip you off and say, all right, the corner route's definitely going to be there, just seeing how they line up?
Definitely. If you have inside leverage and, you know, it's man-to-man technique, and you can always tell if it's man, if the corner's eyes are not looking at you but they're looking at the receivers, if they're looking at the hips, you know, that's a big, huge indicator. And if they're pressed up on them, obviously it's going to be man as well. So as soon as you see that should be a big alert in your head. All right, I'm throwing to the corner. 1, 2, 3, ball should be up.
That was some great stuff there from Steven, man. I mean, I think I could talk with him every single day about a new concept just for Two Technique, and it could just be the Fran Duffy and Stephen Morris Two Technique.
Well, that is your boy.
That's your boy.
Coming from Miami.
All about the U.
Mr. Golden. So,
that's right.
You know, I know he has affinity to you in terms of being in the program.
Yes. So that one, when he arrived.
Did you drop any, like, hey, I know.
So I talked to him, and I was like, hey, you know, you and I met at the Senior Bowl a couple years ago. I worked for, and he was like, oh, you worked for Al at Temple. He immediately remembered.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome.
So, you know.
It's always great when even guys don't necessarily know who you are. They know where, you know, it just kind of, okay, you know I existed. That's cool. You know?
Exactly. So it was just talking with him, you know, exchanging stories and stuff like that. So
it's good to catch up.
So Steven's great. So really good stuff there, again, on the Smash concept. It's one of the most basic plays in football. Everybody runs it high school on up. So, you know, just really interesting stuff. Hope you guys enjoyed it. But that's just one of the fun things that we do here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. And if you're listening here on the Philadelphia Eagles app, if you're listening on the website, and you want to subscribe and get this to your phone each and every week, okay, if you want to get it on Podbay, whatever your native app is, so you go to your smartphone, you can go and look and see if it's your iTunes, if it's Stitcher, if it's whatever the Droid app is. BT, you're a Droid person. I'm more an Apple person. But you know, you have that native podcast app. You can go in, you search for Eagle Eye in the Sky, you subscribe, and it goes to your phone each and every week. You can listen whenever you want. It's fantastic. I would strongly suggest, if you're listening to this on the app, if you're listening to this on the website, listen to BT's advice, because BT gave it to me and I'm giving it to you. Go and subscribe. And we have so many other podcast offerings here at the Eagles Insider podcast. The Journey to the Draft podcast, we keep teasing
it's coming up.
It's coming. Obviously, with
we're trying to get into the college season so we can, you know, really have some substance to talk about. But, you know, it's coming. We're previewing the college, guys.
No question about it. So go on, subscribe, check it all out. I'm on the College Draft podcast with myself and Ross Tucker as well, where we're talking draft guys all year long. So feel free to go and check all of those out. So while we're talking about college football, let's transition here into the final part of the show, Saturday Scouting.
It's time for Saturday Scouting.
Joining us this week on Saturday Scouting is Randy Rosetta from the New Orleans Times-Picayune. You can follow him on Twitter, at Randy Rosetta. Randy, I appreciate the time this morning.
Hey, no problem. I'm glad to jump in and join you guys.
So, Randy, you cover the Bayou Bengals, the LSU Tigers down there in Baton Rouge. And the first guy I want to talk to you about is obviously the biggest prospect right now that I think fans know about nationwide. He's not draft eligible yet, but he will be next year. That's running back Leonard Fournette. Had a huge game this past week against Mississippi State, 28 for 159 and 3 touchdowns. We know what Fournette is on the field. We know what kind of an athletic freak he is and just how physical he is and how hard he is to bring down. But what is he like character-wise? How does the coaching staff view him as a leader moving forward for this team, since he will be here for the foreseeable future?
Well, you know, you've got good timing on your question. I'm actually working on a basketball story about another kid from his high school in New Orleans. And like any big city, there's pockets of New Orleans that are just rough. You know, it's a tough place to grow up, and that young man and Leonard grew up together. If you haven't read his story about Katrina, he's been through a lot as a kid. His family had to live under a bridge during Hurricane Katrina, had to survive, literally survive, for I think it was 2 or 3 weeks out on the street, and it's really helped make him who he is. He's a very, character-wise, he's off the charts. When you talk to him, you can tell that he's a focused young man, and he'll tell you, you know, when he was younger, he did young kid things, got in trouble for talking and horsing around, but there was never any hint of it doing anything wrong. He became a father over the summer, and if you follow him on social media, he's just head over heels like any of us would be with a baby daughter. So he's, if you ranked LSU players by character and how they're going to act off the field, you know, the old cliche about character is what you do when people aren't watching, I think Leonard would be pretty close to the top, if not at the top, among the LSU players in the coach's eyes.
That's really interesting stuff to hear. It's good to hear for one of these big name prospects, because, you know, once draft time comes around for Fournette, whether that's in 2017 or 2018, that will be a big topic of discussion. Sharing the backfield with Fournette, another true sophomore in Brandon Harris, the quarterback. He was named the starter over the summer by Les Miles. How has he reacted to being named the full-time starter ahead of Anthony Jennings? And what does Harris bring to the table from the off-the-field perspective?
Well, we'll go backwards on that. And I think off the field, I think he's a good kid. I think he needed to mature and grow up a lot, which he was a college freshman last year. I've got a teenager at home in high school, and I can't imagine what – I hope she's more mature 3 years from now, but it's a growing process. They're still kids at that point. So I think he had to do that in the off season, off the field, to become better on the field. And I think on the field he brings an incredible dual threat. Anthony Jennings is not here because he doesn't have some talent. It just hasn't blossomed as much as LSU coaches hoped it would. I think they see in Brandon Harris a guy with a higher ceiling, and I think that they like the fact that he's kind of grabbed the bull by the horns this offseason. Anthony Jennings got in trouble off the field. It wasn't necessarily a character issue, as it was just making a really bad decision about doing something that he should have let police be involved, and that opened the door for Brandon Harris. And what he did is in 7-on-7 work when coaches weren't around, again, the old characters, what you do when nobody's around, he kind of took the leadership mantle and ran with it. And I think that's continued in August and fall camp, and I think they like that as much as they do anything that he has improved on physically. And he's improved physically, so it's a really good mix. Now, we saw a little bit of it in the opener in the first half. You saw some throws, you saw some tangible things, but I think the intangibles you saw with him calling a timeout when the clock's running out, taking a sack instead of kind of forcing things on one play, on the read option or on some plays using his feet instead of his arm. So I think that maturity and growth off the field is also manifesting itself on the field with the kid.
And then one of Brandon Harris's big targets, you've got Traven Doral, the junior receiver. He had 4 catches for 15 yards this past week, also 2 carries for 14 yards. He's one of those versatile, movable chess piece type players that can beat you down the field and can be used a number of different ways. What kind of leader is he? Is he one of the leaders there for LSU in terms of that receiver position room?
I think he is the leader. Maybe there's another kid named John D'Arce that's academically a junior. He's sophomore on the roster in his third year. I think those two guys that have been around have learned the system. Traven was actually here when they had a previous offensive coordinator, so he's gone through a couple of different ones. And things kind of got going for him at the end of his redshirt freshman season. He caught a very key touchdown against Arkansas in a late game comeback, and that you could kind of see the light go on at that point. At that point, he was the number 3 receiver behind a couple of guys named Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry. So you kind of understand why he wasn't getting on the field a whole bunch at that point. Once those guys decided to leave, I think, you know, behind the scenes, I think Traven Doral, who's kind of a soft-spoken, almost a country kid, kind of walked into the receiver room, and I would imagine his chest was puffed out a little bit, and he knew it was his time to lead, and he's taken on that role. He was a big play threat last year, but when you talk to him now, he'll talk about how key it is to block in this offense, how key it is to make sure everything's precise and every route is right. And that's what you want from your leader in that group. They've got unquestionable young talent in that crew with Malachi Dupree and DJ Shark and Jazz Ferguson. And all three are making progress, but they have to have somebody to kind of watch, kind of a mother duck to follow around, and that guy has become Traven Doral.
That's very, very good to hear. We hear all the time, especially with the Eagles, how important traits like that are with that leadership inside a position meeting room. Does Vidal Alexander, he was a guard last year, moved back outside to tackle this summer. What have the coaches seen from Alexander, and is he that guy on the offensive side of the ball to kind of be the mother hen and keep these guys in line?
I think on the line, he and Gerald Hawkins both are those guys, both massive human beings, which obviously is a pretty good trait to have for an offensive lineman. I think that, and both of them have moved around a little bit on the offensive line, and I think young guys look at that, and that makes them understand that, hey, I've got to be versatile, I've got to be ready, and I think they understand also it helps in NFL scout's eyes. If you're an offensive lineman, you prove that you can make plays every several different positions. Vidal is a guy who showed up on campus. He was big, and it wasn't, to put it politely, not everything was in the right place it needed to be at the time. He kind of reinvented his body a little bit between freshman and sophomore year. He's a big, strong, physical kid, very affable off the field. But I think he can turn the switch on when he steps on the field. There's no question that he can be a mauler out there. And they've got LSU's kind of started to establish a nice tradition of tackles. Those two guys, he and Gerald Hawkins, I think are going to be the guys to watch on the offensive line this year. Although I will say that Ethan Posick, the center, who's also very versatile, is the guy who was the SEC Offensive Lineman of the Week this week. So I don't know that there's necessarily one guy that the young guys kind of follow. I think it's more by committee with this group, and that's more of a personality thing. And that you could say the same thing when Lyle Collins was here. He was kind of a soft-spoken, gentle giant type. What helps is to have a line coach in Jeff Grimes who, if you don't have a leader, he's going to be the guy that kind of takes control of that room.
How about on the defensive side? Who would you say is the leader on that defensive side of the football?
I think there's a couple of them. I think Kendall Beckwith, the middle linebacker, is definitely a guy who leads by example and has one of those magnetic personalities that you come across with athletes. I think a lot of people kind of lean towards him. And then in the secondary, I think Tre'Davious White, LSU has a tradition of the number 18 jersey where it's passed on to a player who represents basically everything on and off the field, leadership, academics. He does things the right way. And Tre'Davious White was given that honor this year. He's a guy who's very close to Morris Claiborne from the Dallas Cowboys. They grew up in the same city. They literally look almost like they could be brothers. They carry themselves the same way. They do things the right way on and off the field. For example, when LSU needed not necessarily a stop, but a play the other day against Mississippi State late in the game, it was Tre'Davious White who broke up a pass against Arunyan Wilson, who kind of had him beaten for several plays before that. But Tre'Davious White held his ground, made a play. LSU forced a longer field goal. Those are the things that you want a leader to do, and Tre'Davious White came through and did that. So I think he and Kendall Beckwith, I think you have some young guys who are kind of waiting in the wings, like you want young guys to do, Jamal Adams or Kevin Tolliver, some of those guys. But there's kind of the same thing with Jeff Grimes, the coaches on that side of the ball. Ed Orgeron, if he doesn't have a leader on the defensive line, he's going to make sure that guys do things that they need to do to lead, if that makes sense.
And staying in the secondary, the team lost Jalen Mills this summer to a fractured fibula. How big does that group and, you know, really that unit, that defensive unit, how much do they miss him? How much, just in terms of off the field and the leadership aspect, he's still there. But has that loss on the field, what has been the impact there?
I would say it's probably felt more off the field, and that's not to diminish anything that Jalen has done on the field. He's really been maybe their most versatile defensive back the last 3 years. He's started at corner, he started at nickelback, and he started at safety. When he came aboard, he came on and Tyrann Mathieu was still on the roster. They kind of had the idea of Tyrann grooming Jalen Mills to be the next Tyrann Mathieu, and Tyrann Matthew's career ended abruptly. So Jalen Mills got thrust into the fire a little bit, and he had one glaring memory that he would like to have back. He misread a screenplay against Alabama late in the game, and it led to the game-winning touchdown in the final minute. Other than that, he's been really solid on the field. He's not spectacular by any means on the field, but off the field, he's had some off-the-field issues. He was in a situation with a girlfriend that was never completely clear exactly what happened. He was exonerated to a certain level, but he has been one of those guys who, when it was resolved, he came out and said, I apologize for putting myself in this spot. I apologize to my team. And I would imagine behind closed doors, he did that as well. And that, you know, there's a kid who can lead, who never strays and does anything wrong that you can respect. But to me, it's always the kid that has done something wrong that can go to teammates and say, look, I'm human, I made this mistake, I'm going to fix it, and I'm not going to get you guys in this kind of trouble again. And I think that's the kind of leader he is behind the scenes. He's one of those guys that knows the calls. He knows how to put guys in the right place. So I think there is some missing him on the field, but I think off the field, I saw him yesterday, in fact, that you ask about him, he's still walking with a, I don't know if you call it a crutch or a cane on the right side where his leg was literally shattered. And he said he's still showing up at meetings. He's still doing all that stuff that you really, you know, I suppose most injured players would do that, but I have a hunch that he's not just sitting in the back of the room, that he's being vocal and helping guys besides just sitting there.
Yeah, and that's what you want to hear from guys like that are put in that situation. And you talked about the versatility, the ability to play corner and safety and inside in the slot. That's what makes Mills what many people believe to be the best senior safety in the country before the injury. Last question for you, Randy. We talked about all the leaders and things like that. You mentioned a Jamal Adams, the safety there, the true sophomore. Who's next in this LSU program? Who do the nationwide fans need to be made aware of that isn't maybe on that stage yet?
Well, if they saw any of the Mississippi State game, they saw Kevin Tolliver and what he can do, and he's a freshman, and he doesn't look like a freshman. He played every defensive snap. If he wasn't on the best receiver on every play, part of that was because the best receiver was trying to avoid him. He came up with huge play after huge play, does not play like a freshman. I think he's got a chance to be Patrick Peterson good, and that's kind of the gold standard for LSU defensive backs the last 7-8 years, and obviously that's translated pretty well in the NFL with him being an all-pro a couple of times. But Kevin Tolliver is the guy that I think that moving forward after this season will be a guy that gets a lot of attention. And then Jamal Adams, as I mentioned, if there's a guy that maybe can be the next Tyrann Mathieu in terms of playmaking and turning games around at the blink of an eye, it's Jamal Adams. He's done that without the turnovers, without some of the flair of Tyrann. I think if he can add that to his game, it's going to be a benefit to both him and the LSU defense.
Fascinating stuff. Again, Randy Rosetta, you can follow him on Twitter at Randy Rosetta. Appreciate the time, and thank you for joining me here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
Great stuff there from Randy, and you know, just talking with some of these beat guys. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago, BT. I wanted to go a different direction here with Saturday Scouting a little bit, just to hear from some of these beat writers, some of these guys that cover the team, and just get some of the character questions, because you know, we have so long to talk about what these guys do on the field and what they're going to bring to the draft, and whoever is going to stand out at the combine and the Senior Bowl and the All-Star games and what they're going to bring to their new team in the NFL. I want to find out about character, because we start talking about the character thing and it's a lot of reports and stuff like that. I want to get it from the people that are around the program each and every week.
Well, when you think about beat guys, you know, in the NFL, you're kind of like, they don't really, you know, they're around the team, but do they really know the team? But beat guys in college towns are much different. They have a closer relationship to the players, and they kind of get to see who these guys are on and off the field. Right. And obviously, the guys are younger, so they're not as I don't want to say coddled, but they're open and talking to guys and getting to know
there's
guys.
There's a little
more access.
There's a little more access.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's not the NFL where there's, you know, these are your media hours and this time. So it's interesting to hear about, you know, relationships and, you know, what guys are like when they're not playing football.
No question. So, again, great stuff from Randy. You can follow him on Twitter, at Randy Rosetta. While you're at it, I'm at FDuffy3. Give me a follow. I love going back and forth, talking about football with fans. I tweet out the links to this podcast, all the other podcasts I'm a part of, the Eagle Eye in the Sky column, and a whole lot more. So just be sure to go and check that out. Thanks again to Greg. Thanks to Stephen Morris and to Randy and all of you guys out there listening, whether you're on iTunes, on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Podbay, of course, PhiladelphiaEagles.com. And the mobile app. Thank you. And if you get the time, again, we talked about it earlier, leave us a comment, rate the show, let us know what you think, shoot us a question. I want to hear from all of you out there and keep all of you happy. So wherever you listen, just go and shoot us a comment, and we can keep making this show better each and every week. Really appreciate all of you out there that spread the word on Twitter and Facebook and Reddit and all other forms of social media. All that being said, I think that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For my producer, BT, I'm Fran Duffy. We'll talk to you next week.